Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts on Recovery, broadcasting to you from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower in Midtown, overlooking majestic Buckhead in Atlanta, Georgia, where it has been a magnificent day. Seems more like we're just a few weeks from Easter than Christmas. It's unseasonably warm, which happens quite frequently in this part of the country. Not at all like where I grew up in Newton, Massachusetts, where it will be up there, it'd be bitter cold and already dark. They get dark about 4:15 in the afternoon this time of the year, and quite amazingly. At any rate, this program has been used for the last 2 or 3 months to talk about political things because I was so concerned about the state of the nation and what was happening. But we're getting back now to our original calling, and that is to help people with their troubles in recovering from religious abuse, from abuse of any kind, alcoholism, drug addiction, overeating, overspending, pornography, sex addictions, affairs, whatever it is that you use to medicate the pain in your life that you can't face without having something to take care of it. Understand it? Grew up in a highly dysfunctional home and learned at an early age what it was like to be an unwanted child. Even though they said I was wanted, I knew it wasn't true. And it wasn't true. That, along with many other things, particularly family of origin issues, and the fact that alcoholism just runs, it seems like, very heavily in Irish families. I drank too much. There was actually a study that came out, maybe a decade or so ago, and what it did is it took different European nationalities and measured them as far as what their alcohol level was. And it was really interesting because you get into the Scandinavian countries, it's like 1% and 2%. You get down to England at 6 or 8. You get in the southern European places like Italy and Spain, it's 10. And then when it gets to Ireland, it was 28%. Multiples higher than any other. And when I saw these figures, I was absolutely stunned. Not because it was 28%, but because it was that low. I would have thought it was closer to 70 or 80%. And, you know, when people do surveys, one always wonders what they really tell you. All right, as we start out today, As is my custom, I'd like to begin with a prayer. And this is one that I posted today on my blog, Pushing Jesus. And if you just Google Pushing Jesus, there is, I have over 1,000 entries for things for helping people with addictions, and there's books and there's all kinds of stuff if you're interested. This prayer is titled Learning to Do the Next Right Thing Regardless of the Consequences. Father, when I came to you in my distress, I wanted you to make everything better, to nurse my bruises like my mom used to when I was a little boy and hurt myself, to tell me I would be okay and my pain would vanish and soon be forgotten. But that's not what you did, nor what you wanted. Instead, you made it crystal clear that I could not nurse my wounds in solitude, nor enjoy the bitter fruit of self-pity. Instead, you insisted that I suck it up and be a man, stretching me far beyond my comfort zone, insisting that I be more open and vulnerable than I had ever been in my entire life. You guided me, leading me to do the next right thing, regardless of the consequences, regardless of what the outcome would be. Despite my fears and my desire to run and hide, which I masked with a disingenuous smile, I obeyed, doing what you made clear for me to do. I know following your will is never a mistake, even when being obedient makes me look weak. You know what you have planned, and I do not. I can't see the future or understand it at all. But I know that by following my conscience, even when it would be easier to simply walk away, something of value is being created within me, which never existed before, but now does, making me stronger and wiser than I have ever been. For that, I am grateful, knowing that growth comes from you. Amen. Has this been an experience that you've had? Are these the kinds of things that you go through when something knocks you down? You still want your mom? Do you wish that the pain would vanish and be forgotten? Do you nurse your wounds in solitude? Do you enjoy self-pity? Do you engage in self-pity? It's the hardest thing in the world once you start to stop. And there's not one good thing that ever comes from it. When you go through difficult things, have you ever thought that you're being stretched beyond your comfort zone? I know that for me, one of my favorite things to read is My Utmost for His Highest by Oswald Chambers. And it, one of the entries that they had, it makes it as if the comparison is that you are a bow, and that God is the archer, and He pulls the bow, stretching it as He aims the arrow, and stretching it and stretching it, stretching it, and as the bow, you say, oh my goodness, I can't handle one more thing. And then it's pulled tighter and tighter. And then when it is all done, whoosh, the arrow's let go, the pressure's gone, and the arrow, because it's God's arrow, always hits the mark. Is that something that you've had experience with? One never knows. And yet at the same time, when you're going through terrific family issues and problems, hard to not feel, oh, woe is me. And particularly Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, the holidays that are so family-oriented, they may try and take Christ out of Christmas and just make it a seasonal thing, but it is still family-oriented. And when you have dysfunction in your family, there's almost nothing that's worse. It just leaves you so defeated, and the feeling of hopelessness because you only have one mom, you only have one dad, you only have one husband or wife at a time anyway, and your children and siblings are always there. When one of them gets involved in drugs or inappropriate relationships or alcoholism, it makes every single thing more difficult. I have a niece who lives up in New England. She had a very difficult time with her family growing up. Ran away when she was 16 with some guy. Ended up rejecting men completely and embracing women. Was a prison guard for years. Drank to excess to numb the pain. Became an alcoholic. She was predisposed to be an alcoholic. She had way too much of it in her genetic background. Honestly, just about everybody in our family has a problem with alcohol. There are only a few that don't, and that's just because they say they don't. They really do. My niece was so bad off, they put her in detox numerous times. Several lockdown facilities where she would be in for over a month, 6 weeks, drying her out. When she'd get back out, she'd go right back to the alcohol. Sometimes being sober no more than 2 or 3 days. Finally, it got to her. She got hepatitis C from alcoholism. Her liver was shot at a very young age. With her liver being shot and having hepatitis C, what did she do? She kept drinking. Because the pain was so great, and because she had become addicted to it, highly addicted to it. Well, her kidneys have finally failed. She's in the hospital, close to death, waiting for a kidney liver transplant. That's probably never going to come. She'd be very low on the list of priorities for any kind of transplant that would come up because she brought it on herself. Frankly, I'm surprised that she's even a potential potential candidate for it at all. That's how difficult this stuff can be. So alcohol is going to cost her at least 3 decades of her life. She had a hard time during family events, Christmas time, holidays. Just not the kind of thing that, you know, it just makes it so difficult. Is it like that for you? Is it like that for someone that you know or love? Or are you dreading being with some people because it's like, oh, gosh, they're going to get drunk and just make rear end out of themselves and just make spoil it for everybody. I hear that all the time. I think it's very interesting because National Alcohol Recovery from Alcoholism Month is April, which I don't get at all. It should be January because it's the holidays like right now where people get so involved in drinking and drugging and using so they don't have to feel, so they can just numb out because they don't want to deal with life on life's terms. That's why my experience in AA, which has been 20 years, is that in January, more people go to AA and pick up a chip and surrender and turn their lives over to God to help them recover from alcoholism because they just can't do any better without it. And after the holidays, that, you know, there's just so many people that, you know, that try to get past that. By the way, I wrote my story, and it's called Hi, My Name is Jack, and Simon & Schuster published it. If you're interested in taking a look at it, there's stuff on my website, which is www.jacklotz.me. www.jacklotz.me. Most of the time, people have .com, but I have .me because it's all about me. That particular site is anyway. And if there's anything that you want to talk about, you're certainly free to call in. The number is 347-326-9949. As we're talking about this alcoholism and all of the things that that come from it, it's hard for people to turn their lives over to God. They feel like He doesn't care when He does. And there's some traditions where it looks like God really doesn't care. I put a post up on Facebook yesterday of a woman in Iran who was raped, became pregnant because of the rape, and because she didn't have 4 witnesses saying it was a rape, just 2, She was hung. She was the victim and became the victim of Islam, of Sharia law. The God of Sharia law, Allah, doesn't care. Not the same God that we talk about on this program the God we refer to is the Judeo-Christian God, the Father of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Jesus Christ. I'm unapologetic about that. If you want to get well, you've got to have a source for your strength. And Almighty God is real. And He's there. And He's intent on helping you. Now, if your issue is recovering from religious abuse, if you've been in a Christian situation that has been very difficult, we have an 11-step program, which at the beginning of the year, we're going to start going through the 11 steps 1 week at a time. Right now, I'm going to just read them to you. The 11 steps. One, I acknowledge that my life is shipwrecked and not where I want it to be. Two, I commit to stop living my life in pursuit of self-defeating behavior. Have you been pursuing self-defeating behavior? You know what that is. You can't get better until you stop chasing after the wrong thing. Three, I accept that the responsibility for getting back on track is mine and no one else's. In particular, in recovering from religious abuse, when somebody else has wounded you, it's quite easy to blame them and say, it's their fault, not mine. I'm not going to do anything until they apologize. And, of course, they never apologize. It's not what they do. They don't think they're wrong. They wouldn't abuse you if they thought that they were doing it. They think that they've got a right to do it, so that'll never happen. So in order to get back on track, you have to follow step three, which is accepting the responsibility for getting them back on track is yours and no one else's. Four, I choose to believe what God says about Himself, that He is good and can be trusted. I recognize that God is not the abuser. Rather, people who misuse their authority are the abusers. Five, I recognize that the only way back to a productive life is exactly the way I came. Therefore, I commit to repairing my relationship with God and making amends with everyone I've wronged along the way. Six, I refuse to become like those who have abused me and abandoned my desire to spread malice because of my pain and my anger. This can be a tough one for people. When they're abused, they want to lash out. They want to do unto others what's been done to them. It can be a very difficult thing. Definitely not something that you want to be involved in. It just makes you bitter and definitely unlikable. Seven, I will make a detailed written account of my abusive experiences as well as my subsequent behavior. I commit to being as thorough and honest as I'm able. Eight, I will share my experience and my own wrongdoing with a trusted friend, confessing the exact state of my heart. Now, that can be a tough one. There are lots of people that are willing to listen, but being trusted is another thing. They have to be somebody that you can completely trust, and if not, you want to stay clear. And that is for absolute sure. 9. I humbly ask God to change anything He wishes, and I ask Him to heal my pain. Because God forgives us as we forgive others, I forgive my abusers. That's the toughest part that there is. It's the mandate of the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Tough stuff. It's where you have to really man up and be the person that you're called to be. Definitely a growth opportunity. 10. I choose to believe God still has a purpose for my life, a purpose for good and not evil. 11. I make a commitment to nurture my relationship with God, asking Him to reveal His will to me and to give me the power to carry it out. Now, no matter how far down you are, no matter what kind of a mess you have made of your life, God still loves you. He still has a plan for you. You can change it, but you have to want to. You have to admit where you are. Stop doing the things that are defeating you. Admit it's your responsibility to get back on track. Trust God because He's trustable. Get busy at it. Writing down what you've done wrong. Making changes. Admitting to people what you've done that's been wrong. And making a commitment, not just apologizing, but making a commitment to change your behavior so that you're not like that anymore. Personally, people like to be around me. It hasn't always been that way. It's been that way for many, many years. But there were many years before that when it wasn't true. When I realized what was going on, I knew that my life was shipwrecked. I knew that I was the one responsible for making it that way. I knew the behavior that I was doing that made it shipwrecked. I had to just abandon all of that and say, you know what? If I'm going to be boring the rest of my life, I'll be boring. But I'm not boring. I'm sitting here talking to you on the radio about some things that can help you. Isn't that where you want to be sometime in your life? The kind of person that people like and respect, want to be around? When you continue with your life, don't you want your children to look up to you? Of course you do. It's all possible. Every last bit of it. You just have to make the changes necessary to get back on track with your life. When you do, you can be everything God ever intended for you to be. Everything. Even the things that have been negative and that have sidelined you can be used for good because you'll have some bad experiences that you can talk to people about that are real and genuine. That's all for tonight. Let me just say, God bless you and God bless the United States of America. Good night.